There are a few questions before me. Is karma real? What does it mean, Hansika? I don't myself understand your question. What is meant by is karma real? What karma? You mean Purva Janma karma? Karma from the previous lives? Is that what you mean? Will you be attentive? Because it is a lifelong lesson. See, we have got karma bandha, it is a theory. A theory need not be a fact. We say parallel lines don't meet. Now, in order to prove it, we say, if the parallel lines were to meet, it would make an angle, etc., etc. Parallel lines will not meet. You have not extended the parallel lines up to the infinite level. So there are many things which are theory. The theory need not be a fact. The purpose of karma bandha, this theory, is to deal with the psychological needs of man. We have got a mind, and the mind imposes some needs for us. These needs have to be met. So we have found in the large majority of people, reduce the speed, in the large majority of people, there is a crying need for something like a karma bandha sukur, one. Secondly, the theory has got a fact associated with it. What is that fact? You have to be very sensitive in catching the point. As I was discussing in Kathopanishad, when a person dies, there are two points. Either he has died and gone, he has become extinct. Another is he has not died, only the body is damaged. That he part, it is not affected. Between the two, you tell me which is true. The second part is true. Because if something was existing, it cannot become non-existent later. So to say that a person has gone into extinction is wrong. So what can be done? We will have to say, only his body has fallen. Who was living in the body? That you cannot call it, that presence, etc., people will not understand. If it was a he, it was a he. It was a she, it was a she. That person continues to be. So the question arises, what happens to him? He was with a body now. He will have to be with another body later. So when will he get another body? Then you are told that he will get another body. The fact is that that statement is more conforming to the truth of existence rather than saying it's all gone, nothing is surviving. So this is the factual part of it. The other part is a psychological fulfillment. What is this theory providing us? It provides us with a feeling that birth and death are not the final of our life. Just like we are born now, we were born earlier, and we will again be born later. Just like we are going to die here, we have died so many times, we will again die. In spite of birth and death taking place, we have got an eternal or a continuing life. This is a very good fact necessary for us. Rather than thinking that you appeared yesterday, day after tomorrow you go. So far as our identity is concerned, it's always better to think that death does not mean extinction, it's only a transition. If it is a transition, what happens to the soul after death and what will govern it is a necessary question. So we say, all the actions that you are performing fall into two categories. We are not discussing the material, secular and visible effects of your actions. We are discussing the religious concept called virtue and vice. You are doing so many actions, personal, domestic, professional, social, religious. All these actions fall into two categories. One is called virtue, another is called vice. What is virtue? It is very difficult to explain what is virtue, but we have to define everything. the summary description of virtue is paropakaraha punyaya. Whatever you do in the way of serving others, helping others, is punya. And whatever you do to hurt and harm others is papa. We have a celebrated statement. Ashtadasha Puraneshu Vyasasya Vajanadvayam Paropakarah Punyaya Papaya Parapidanam. In all the 18 Puranas, Vyasa has only two statements to make. Whatever is helpful and serving the others is punya, and whatever is harmful to the others, it is papa. Applying these two categories, all your actions are grouped into two. And whatever are the most prominent, they will be deciding the factor. Now so many, see, this is not the first birth. Time has been there for long and so many generations have passed. So naturally, the assumption, these are all assumptions and inferences. We were alive a number of times. Every time we are born, we undergo the past karma, we also accrue something new. So when you die, what will happen? Whatever karmas are surviving in your lot, they will be merged with the stock and everything will be shuffled. After shuffling, which are the most pronounced and prominent virtue and vice, they will be taken and it will govern your next life. Shall I tell you a story? There was a rich man who was threatening to die rather young. Threatening to die young. So everybody was naturally aghast. The death should be prevented. So they called astrologers and said, what shall we do to save him and prolong his life? Astrologer will necessarily have to give an answer. Otherwise, astrology fails, he also fails. So he said, and that is why astrologers are to be worshipping Lord Muruga specially, so that they will have presence of mind always to make the best forecasts. So he said, very, very difficult, critical. I shall suggest something. Will you do it? Yes. Dig a tank immediately within a matter of days or hours. A public tank. So a public tank was dug within a week. And he said, let birds come and bathe there, drink the water, let animals come and the people go on bathing. Throw it open, make it convenient. So within 1 week, the tank was made, steps were made, birds started coming, drinking, bathing, animals also started coming, people also started taking bath. Can you imagine the punya it accrues? And because every day, more and more people, birds, animals, etc. started coming, this man had so much of punya. It outnumbered everything that he had done earlier. So his life was saved. What do you say about it? We are very clever people. India is very clever. So the punya karma is such, it is so very good and so very noble. I was told by Mr. Nambiar an instance which took place somewhere very near here. There was a Brahmin, Kerala Brahmin. He got smallpox. So olden times there was no treatment for smallpox, it was only undergoing it. So what generally our people used to do is, all the people will empty the house, they will go away, leaving the patient there. And they will take some neem leaves and keep them on the gate so that people will understand. And anybody who has had smallpox and who was cured, he will come and offer him some food. This is the habit. Nothing else. So this person was examined by a lady who was an expert. She will see the eruptions. And after seeing the eruptions, she will say whether this man will take his bath or die. So she said, I am very sorry. I am not able to find anything auspicious in the number of eruptions that you have. So life is at risk. Now he was a worshipper of goddess, and they also had a temple, aristocratic family, in their own house. He said that, I am a worshipper of Devi. I am doing it very well, very well, very well. If in spite of my worship and prayers, if I am going to die of smallpox, smash the temple, he said. No more temple and no more worship. He said, I will simply smash the temple and I will have no truck with Devi anymore. You know, on the third day, the lady was called again. She said, a good eruption has appeared and you will have your bath. Don't play with fire. That's all what I have to say. These are instances which have taken place in the land here. Maybe within 150 years. So the Karmabandha says, every time you end up your life, the total karmas performed by you will be taken and it will be joined to the stock you already have and it will be reshuffled, and whatever is the most prominent, that will be taken, a share, a quantum, and that will govern your next life. If you are able to get liberation, you are free. Otherwise, you will accrue further karma. That karma will be joined to the stock. Again, afresh. Like that, it will go on endlessly. So the karma is divided into three sectors. One is called Sanchita, already done and earned. Sanchita stock, old stock. Another is called Prarabdha, now being done. Then if you don't get liberated, so many Prarabdhas will be there and the old stock will be increased. It will never decrease. That is called Agami, the yet to come. Already done, being done, and yet to be done. These are the three of Karmabandha. Now, the philosophy says that by your self-knowledge, you may be able to terminate the old stock and the coming would-be stock, but not Prarabdha. But Shankara and the others say, what Prarabdha? When you get enlightened, all the karmas put together have only one effect, Sukha and Dukha. Papa and Punya literally mean what? Sukha and Dukha. These Sukha Dukhas are neutralized and harmonized. So what further karma is for you? So a Jivan Mukta completely sheds the Agami, the Sanchida, and also Prarabdha. Does it make any sense to you? Is your question answered? But if you ask me, these are all assumptions and inferences, not facts. But they are necessary to handle the human mind, give it the necessary prop and assurance. One important point about karma, which cannot be contradicted, is that unless you have the theory of karma, your life becomes in the hands of others. What? I am born of my father and mother. Suppose my parents are cruel and they are sinful, I will also become sinful. Is it not? Huh? How can it be? I am only born and I develop my will and wish at the age of 18 or 21. Before that, for whatever has taken place, how can you hold me responsible? So can my parents' actions or grandparents' actions, all of them, affect me adversely? I will not accept that. I am an individual and I have to be governed by what I do. I cannot be submitted to whatever others have done. When such a question comes, you have no answer. So Karmabandha says, you may be born of your parents. It is only a biological event. The inner true event has nothing to do with your father, with your mother. You are a jiva, different from the body. And you are born only biologically. So the biological parenthood is only biological. It will not affect you, the soul. You will be governed by your karma. Let your father and mother be anything. Their virtue will not grace you. Their sin will not eclipse you. You are governed by your own karma. So this makes us very independent. Otherwise, if I belong to a sinful family, I will become sinful. And there is no justice in it. Am I clear or not? Do you agree? So the karma gives you a very free, independent and sovereign position. And it tells you, no matter where you are born, whether you are resourceful or not, your papa and punya have nothing to do with your secular standard. It is only following your mind's attitude, whether you are sinful at heart or whether you are virtuous at heart. Be virtuous and snap all the karmic ties. And punya means helping the others, papa means harming the others. You can even say helping yourself and harming yourself, that will also be included in the papa. Suppose you breathe carbon dioxide, it is harming. In the same manner, don't do things which will harm you also. Because harming is a common concept. Whatever harms me will harm you also. Any other point? Adi, it is actually, it is a statement that see, a child born in an atmosphere of goodness, you see, what is after all the child imbibing? The child is shaped in the mother's womb, and after that the child is imbibing the environment provided. So if you have a noble and a good heart, and this nobility was there in the family, automatically it will start percolating. That is what is meant by that. So the environment itself will become different. See, the first thing that we must have in the world is birth in a good family. You must be born in a good family. That family should be good, and you should be brought with a good environment. These are the best things. You can walk only with the legs available. Similarly, you can only build on the environmental influence which you have. And you can build only from the prenatal influences you inherit at the time of birth. This is a fact. So I must have an uttariyam then. Ask. What did you say?
Another example. Let's say you have a father who is an alcoholic and he has two sons. One turns out to be an alcoholic like him. And the other is so upset. I think the father was an alcoholic. He turns completely opposite.
No, that has nothing to do with karma. Father's alcoholism need not affect you in one way or the other. Here are two individuals born who exercise their options differently. One individual said, I have seen my father do this, I will never touch it. Another man who says, it is already in my blood because I am born of his father, of my father. It means that he likes alcohol and he finds an excuse for it. That's all. Alcoholism is not at all connected with this. See, everyone is born and he is surrounded by a number of elements. I would like to tell you very clearly that all the subhumans in the world, their tendencies are static. They are not supposed to change. A cat will pounce upon the rat. When it comes to human beings, the human being is supposed to exercise his choice and mend his ways in any manner he wants. So in the human you will find all subhuman tendencies are telescoped and he is placed in between with an intelligence and a will. You exercise your option and decide which way you will walk. Now one person walks this way, another person walks the other way. It is his individual creation. But to have children who will select the best way, that is why we belong to a good family, we say. So in a family where all people are good, it's very, very difficult to have a bad boy. In our Mahabharata, there is a very clear statement. When Duryodhana was born, all ill omens were seen. And experts were called and they said, you simply destroy this child, otherwise you will be ruined. But they did not. Naturally, the whole clan was ruined. What is the other question?
We should take birth in a good family, good mother, parents. So we don't have any choice for that, no? As he selects them.
What is the harm if we start thinking, in case I am going to be born, I should be born in a good family?
In the previous
whether it works or not, why, what is the harm in thinking like that?
So that will be in the previous janma,
no? No, no, no. Previous janma, you cannot do anything now. We are only discussing about this janma. Why are you going to previous janma?
No.
We are already born. And we are speaking about the born individuals, not the unborn individuals. Suppose you are going to die and you are afraid that I may have a further birth. What should you think? Should you think for birth in a good family or in a bad family?
Good family.
Right, think like that. Forget about it. What will happen, nobody will be able to say. Now I finally come to the final position. What is that? In our life we are confronted with two items. One is things which are verifiable, experiential and factual, and things which are unverifiable, unfactual and imaginary. Do you agree or not? Huh? What was my previous life? It is imaginary. What am I going to be in further life? It is imaginary. What am I here now? Is factual. And in this factual life, what should I think? I will tell you, this is the way you have to think. Please don't extend anything further. Because anything beyond this life is a matter of assumption and imagination. In our shastras, they speak about birth, rebirth, heaven, hell, this, that and all. So, Shankara would put it in this manner. Our scriptures speak about two items, experiential and inexperiential items. How many times shall I say this? Experiential and inexperiential. Experiential and inexperiential. In regard to the experiential items, you will have no doubt. Is my family good? Am I well born? No problem, you can understand. What was I in my earlier life? No answer. What shall I be in my future life? No answer. Is there any heaven or hell? No answer. So, with regard to inexperiential items, you will always have doubt and indecision. So, leave them and take to the experiential where you are sure of what you do. So, discuss matters up to death. Discuss matters after birth. Never discuss life before birth and after death. This is how you have to dispose of. Shall I stop the subject, go to the next one? Huh? Please explain how to take on the vanaprastha phase in the modern life. See, the essence of vanaprastha life does not change whether it is modern or ancient life. What is vanaprastha? A clear retirement and disconnection from the household life. What? A clear? Please explain how to take on the vanaprastha phase in the modern life. See? What are you in the household life? When the children are grown up, when your own son and your own daughter have established themselves, they have their families, they don't want you. You also don't need them. So far I worked for the family. I was earning, I was preserving, I was hoarding. I was doing all these things for the sake of my family. Now my family is no more my family, it is independent. My son has his family, daughter has her family. And we are left alone, two of us, couple. When it comes to that stage, you stop and retire from your household life. What all you will do in a household life, don't do them. Then what else will you do? You will take to a life of inner mento-intellectual development. In the household life, you had no chance to look into the mind or develop yourself. Now you have taken up a life where your mind should be the focus, intelligence should be the focus, read as much of spiritual material as possible. If you have a guru, go to the guru. If you don't have, try to get hold of one, accept one. Spend time in his company, help him in his activities. This is a point where I can tell you what I wanted to say, I forgot somehow. See, just like you have a blood and a matrimonial relationship, in the same manner there is a spiritual relationship that is called Guru Shishya. Don't count it the least, count it the most. It is just like your relationship with God. You have blood relationship, matrimonial relationship. Whenever I give Diksha to somebody, I say, please understand one thing. You were born, you don't know. By the time you grew up into 2 years or so, your mother says, I am your mother, this is your father, you accept. You don't know. You have no part to play in your birth. After so many years, normally what people do? They get educated, they get married, they have children, etc., etc., and they go. Now, very rarely it occurs to somebody to understand, I want to know what is meant by this human life. I have the power of thinking, power of speech. So what am I supposed to do? I don't know. My parents cannot answer. My husband cannot answer. My wife cannot help. So we have come to you, my dear sir. Please accept me and tell me what I am supposed to do with human purpose and fulfillment. This is an optional second birth. The first was a biological event over which you had no control. Now this is an optional birth so far as your mind and intelligence are concerned. From there the Guru-Shishya relationship starts. That relationship is very, very sacred, very, very sacred. It is unlike the conjugal relationship. It is unlike the parental and filial relationship. It is unlike the friends relationship. This is something very optional, something to do with your soul. And you discuss with your guru matters of the soul. People tell me things which they will not tell each other between the husband and the wife also. Where will they say? So this is a very, very open relationship. And very few disciples can have this kind of an openness. They will not disclose. If I disclose everything about me, I will be devalued by my guru. If I disclose everything, then he will have access to my heart. He will know what I have and what I am. See, this kind of a fear. Are you supposed to have fear? You go there to have fearlessness. I don't think a guru will ever exploit you or capitalize you. He will be looking after you much more tenderly than your father, mother, husband, wife, son, brother, friend. That is actually a guru. Now, my body is already running the 84th year. 83 completed. Acha? So, I am already 83 then. See, my life is restricted to the second floor of the ashram. And only for purposes I come down. Otherwise I live in the second floor. Very rarely I come down. We get into the car from there and then go away. Previously I used to come down and walk. Somehow or other the exposure in the morning, my neck, I get fever, I get cold, something like that. So I am walking only in the veranda. That also yesterday the doctor came and said, there is one step for a veranda. He said, avoid it. So I go only up to the edge. Even one step I don't get down. So I am restricted there. And there are only two functions which I do. Either I speak or I write. Nothing else I do. I write sometimes 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 10 minutes. Of course I write for half an hour, 1 hour, 2 hours, etc. But generally I only do speaking and writing. When I meet people, I speak, I give lectures, I talk to people on the phone. Otherwise I write. Ma has a constant complaint that we have no time to talk to you. We have no time means not that they have no time. I don't give any time, she says. So you should understand that we are living together, but we hardly interact with each other to speak. We are quite concerned with our own businesses. When I... What matters? Urgent matters. Another complaint that I get is, somebody telephones and gives me an information, I forget to pass on to them. So the news becomes unknown to them. So I am guilty of that. Now this Guru-Shishya relationship with a sacred one, all of you are disciples in one way or the other. Maybe you are initiated disciples or not initiated. At least you are students and seekers, that is why you come here. And my position in front of any one of you is only that of a guru and a shishya. Not all people need be initiated. It is for you to decide. There is one boy whom I would have very much liked to have initiation, but the boy never asked me for initiation and he has never taken it. Though I have lived in their house, I like the boy so much, but he has never asked me. Now he is a little out of contact also. Just imagine. I have the lingering feelings for him every now and then. In the context of this Guru-Shishya relationship, what I have to tell you is that our ashram cannot be run by a few inmates alone. We have enough of work. Either we will have to progressively reduce our work, stop visiting places, and almost get what? Stagnant. And then we will get weaned off, that's all. Or if the ashram has to be vibrant and be active, some of you will have to come here at least by turns, forming a roster, so that one or two of you will be here in the ashram always. It can be for 1 week, it can be for 10 days, 1 month, 2 months, like that. But two people at least should be there in the ashram from amongst our devotees. And that visit should not be a leisurely visit. It should be an austere visit, by virtue of which you come here to take up some work, to substitute some positions and help us to become confident and relaxed. That should be the purpose. Some people knowing Malayalam, because this is Kerala, will always be welcome. They should stay here. We must be able to say, you know, when a devotee comes, we can trust them to any extent. Our ashram has got very different departments. All of them cannot be handled by all people. So we have to be very discreet in handling matters. We still are very efficient. Still some mistakes are there. I got a letter in which he says, he has received a receipt with a covering letter. He says, I have not made any remittance to the ashram. Now I went there, please speak. So they discuss the subject with me and they say, with the same name, V.K. Ramakrishnan, the name is there. But it is the same name, no difference at all. So the computer picked up one name and they posted the letter. And what is this? This is a remittance sent to the bank. So from the bank we could not get detail. The name at least was available. So one name they accepted, and that happened to be the lottery was wrong. Now what? We have another name now. When we write it to him, what will he say? That also we don't know. So it is for people to inform us when they make an offering through a remittance. We tell them repeatedly. So how to tally and what is the problem? See, remittance has come, we are not able to identify it. So they identified this name and sent a letter. He has said, no, now we will try the other name. Suppose he also says no, then we are in doldrums. So such mistakes also should not happen. We should be very careful. One envelope has returned saying that Singapore, and they have put Indian stamps and sent. So I was asking why this has happened. It is generally we put foreign airmail, etc., a rubber stamp. See, we have recently posted about 9,500 envelopes. Another 10,000 are going to be posted during the next few days. So we have such bulk mail posting at least 4 or 5 times in a year. Some people have been coming and helping us. Similarly, very recently somebody has sent a letter. I ordered books, the books have come, and he has so many words to praise our packing. Very well packed, he says. I was very happy. So I think two of you should come there physically to assist us. Think seriously about it. Every time two of you should be here and substitute yourself one after the other and help us. And there should always be at least one person from Kerala so that they can deal with the local matters. That is, by the way, Vanaprastha life. So it is a breaking from household life. What are you as a householder? You know, all the household links should be broken. And you should feel and announce that I am a Vanaprastha. A couple have become Vanaprasthas in Delhi. You must have read about it. You know, their children came. They formally gave them a send-off. And they were so happy that the parents have become Vanaprasthas. And they gave them with a lot of ovation, they sent them the ashram.
It is our Hari Om Gautam and his wife Saroj Gautam. They wanted to take up Vanaprastha. For some time they were talking, and then Swamiji agreed. Then the they decided. Then the eldest daughter, who is in Jhansi, they have got 2 daughters and 1 son. Son is in Delhi, and one is the eldest daughter in Jhansi, another daughter is in Pune. So all of them came to give a send-off to the parents. And the eldest daughter called me and said that, kaise karna hai? What should we do to make this event memorable for us? Or what should be done? So then I talked to them, and I also asked her to talk to Swamiji.
Then I have sent a letter of instruction saying that as Vanaprasthas, these are the points that you have to make sure. Don't go to your houses, don't go to your relatives. Let the children come to you. And when they come to you, you discuss, do not discuss unnecessary household matters. Let them come here and imbibe your Vanaprastha ascetic sublimity to some extent at least, and then go.
Now I am remembering. I asked her, what do you want to do? Then she said that we want to do a Pada Puja for our parents. So okay, do a Pada Puja. I asked Swamiji. Swamiji said yes, let them go ahead. I think they did a Pada Puja for the parents and sent them off.
Now, any finer instruction I will give personally. But generally you have to break from the household life. If you are a professional, you should not be a professional. If you are earning money, stop it. You don't want. The only point that I don't say anything particularly about is, suppose you are a pensioner or you have X amount of money and with the interest you are living. I am not insisting that you should leave them because you are only a Vanaprastha. But if any youngster brahmacharin or brahmacharini is coming here, my instruction will be, wave your hands and come. Simply come and share with us whatever we have. If it is food, food. If it is starvation, starvation. This is how a young seeker should come to the ashram. But I am not going to say the same for the elderly people. So you continue But you should understand that you don't have any belonging to yourselves. So the best will be if you have a pension. Generally your vanaprastha life will be if you have a guru and guru has an ashram, etc. It will be in the company of the guru. So whatever income you have, never own it. I don't want to write to the government saying that I don't want this pension. That is what I would have liked. But I cannot say that and it is not feasible. So never consider that you are a possessor of what you have. So treat it as if it is an offering that you have got from God. And what you do, you can use your own discretion. Never be a hoarder. Don't hoard things for tomorrow. Live in a very simple manner. Replace all sensory comforts and delights and cravings. And try to have the delight of the mind and the heart. Your minds will start giving you a lot of delight. This is the vanaprastha life. Do you get your answer? Huh? Where is Narayan? Have you got your answer? Any further fine-tuning instructions I can give you later. Can one sadhana be only on wisdom? No. Where is that vanaprastha? So in the modern life, previously, you know, vanaprastha does not mean you go to the forest. If we have forest environment and we can live there, taking fruits, etc., it's okay. But at present it may not be possible. Population has increased. Forest is much less. See, 30% of any state or nation should become forest. But we don't have that much, except in Assam or so. We don't have 30% land as forestation. So it will be very difficult. But let us apply it on this. Then, Kishore is asking one question. What is that? When devotion dawns, the shining lamp of wisdom appears. Can one sadhana be only on wisdom? Yes. Krishna speaks about devotion only from the 7th chapter onwards up to the 12th. Till then he had never brought devotion at all. So the first 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, which are the most fundamental, ultimate and important, there you don't find any reference to devotion at all. So the sadhana can be wisdom based. But devotion also is wisdom based, as I explained to you. When I say mat karma gridu, mat paramaha, mat bhaktaha, sangavarjidaha, nirvairaha, sarvabhudeshu, where is devotion there? You work for me. That means in your mind and the intelligence, the sense of resignation should dawn. Consider me to be supreme. This is also a thought process and a decision process of your mind. Sangavarjidaha, take away your clinging. All these are mento-intellectual. So in the devotion also, it is ultimately mind and intelligence. There is no difference at all. So wisdom sadhana alone can be. Mostly we are discussing wisdom sadhana here. Jayaratnam writes, Swamiji, the Upanishads are a sort of subsequent products of the Vedas. Kathopanishad deals with the abstraction. Okay. I thought I will not go into such detail because we don't have time. See, take devotion as a devotional science itself. Sri Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yome Bhaktiya Prayachadi Taduham Bhaktyubhardam Ashnami Prayadatmanaha. You give me as a part or mark of devotion anything like a flower or a leaf or a fruit or water. Now you are giving all these things to God. But does God partake of anything that you give? No. Then what is it that He partakes? Tadaham bhakti upahirdam ashnami prayadatmanaha. Now while giving this article, when you quote it with devotion with your mind and intelligence, that devotional quoting alone is looked for and accepted by God. So here, what do you find? Is it so much a devotional act of offering, or it is a devotional attitude that you have to develop consciously in your mind? So it becomes mind-based, intelligence-based. Then he says, going to the 18th chapter, Yataha pravrittihi bhutani, bhuta, bhudanam, yataha pravrittir bhutanam, yena sarvamidam tatam, svakarmanatam abhyarsya siddhim vindati manavaha. Please follow this. Yataha pravrittihi, is it bhutanam? Yatha pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvamidam tatam. Yataha pravrittihi bhutanam. Come along with me. From where all the activities and pulsations of the beings are originated, have originated. Yena sarvamidam tatam. By which all are pervaded. So if your worship is of the source of the entire creation and the presence permeating in everything, in what manner will you worship that? You tell me. Suppose you take a flower and put it in front of an idol, you are worshipping the presence in the flower, in the air, in the hands, and also in the idol. So the flower present, the presence present in the flower, can you worship it by plucking the flower and throwing it? Am I clear when I say this? Why are you not responding? See, I am worshipping the presence which is everywhere, including the flower. So when I break it, what does it mean? And I am throwing it in another place. So that cannot be a worship of the presence which is permeating everywhere. Then how can it be worship? Svakarmanatam abhyarchya. You have to worship him by your activities. That means, without looking for anything specifically or separately devotional, all the activities that you are performing, you should understand that they are motivated, they are activated, they are encompassed by the same presence. Thinking in this manner, understanding in this manner, let all the activities you perform be an equal dedication to that all-pervading presence. Tell me, what is this devotion now? Is it not a process of understanding? Then he says further, what? Ishvara sarvabhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi brahmayan sarvabhudani yantrarudhani mayaya tameva sharanam gacha sarvabhavena bharada. God is seated in the heart of everyone. As if mounted on a wheel, he is revolving everybody. As in an automobile, the wheels are moved by. See, the movement is very central from somewhere, and the wheels are moving. So he is seated in your heart, and he is making the senses revolve, body revolve, mind revolve, everything. Now, that being the case, Arjuna, what you should do? Tameva sharanam gacha. Seek refuge under him. Let him be the anchor for you. Sarvabhavena. By virtue of all the feelings and bhavas arising from your mind and intelligence. Now, don't you find a very clear merging of devotion and wisdom here? Svakarmanatam abhyarchya siddhim vindati manavaha. From karma, you are taken from bhava. So initially it is material worship, then it becomes activity worship, thirdly it becomes attitudinal and knowledge worship. Is it okay? Tumi kichu bolte chaichi? Now, this we will take up tomorrow. Jayaratnam. We will take it up tomorrow. Are you clear about the questions and the answers?
Prabuddham vimuktam vikaradihinam Prasannam sadanitya bodhaswarupam param nishchalam nirgunam sarvarupam bhajeham sadanusmarami pranaumi prabuddham vimuktam vikaradihinam prasannam sadanitya bodhaswarupam param nishchalam nirgunam sarvarupam bhajeham sadanusmarami pranaumi.